Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, although I doubt there are many of those out there, but welcome to our program, Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. I'm your host, Roy Richards, and today we're going to continue on the theme of recovery, the final of our six R's along the path to midlife renewal. And on previous programs, our guests have talked about recovery from depression and job loss. They've talked about how prayer and an extra mile attitude can aid your recovery. And today we will talk about perhaps the most difficult recovery of all, recovery from a major accident, health crisis, or a similar life-threatening disaster. And if you can recover from a life-threatening disaster, you should be able to recover from anything, right? Well, for some, disasters result in permanent life-altering results, like paralysis, brain injury, amputation. We all know about the Boston Marathon and what happened to some of the innocent bystanders there. For others, permanent emotional scars are created, even though they may recover physically. But like me, you probably wonder why some folks snap back quickly and effectively and move on in strength while others remain physically or emotionally disabled for life. Today's guest survived a crash when his motorcycle collided head-on into the side of a car that pulled in front of him, and he went headfirst into a driver's side door at 40 miles an hour. Doctors said he should have been killed or paralyzed for life, or at least permanently injured, scarred, or brain damaged, but 24 hours he was wheelchaired out of the hospital, and he walked to the car, and he's gone on to lead a normal life. And our guest is Knighton Warbeck, who also overcame a 28-year battle with stuttering to become a noted public speaker and a performance life coach, and he's also author of the book The Silent Knight, in which he reveals the secret of impossible success, as he calls it. And we're most interested to learn what this secret is all about. Knighton is here to describe a technique he has developed that can enable you and I to overcome our toughest challenges, often within minutes. Hello, Knighton, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me on the show. And I got to tell you, just listening to that, sometimes I forget some of the neat things I've done with my life. And we're going to talk today about how you, the listener, can use these techniques, visualizations, and so forth to get through almost anything in your life.
Yeah, well, please begin by telling how you did it, the technique that you used to avert the potential consequences and to recover so quickly and effectively from that motorcycle crash. Because that's, if you look at Knighton's website, you can see the side of the car that he went into, and I just don't know how he even survived.
Well, actually, that's a misnomer. That isn't the exact photo. It's something similar.
Oh, I see.
I didn't at the time think I would be speaking about this some 21, 22 years later after this accident.
Yeah.
But I do have one piece left from my motorcycle, and it's the speedometer. That's basically all that was salvageable. And I'll tell you what I did. And I wasn't the first one to do this. I'm not the original, but I certainly learned from others. So let me give you just a brief background on this technique that I call the K-Dub technique. K-Dub as in KW, as in my initials, short term. So here we go.
Yeah, that'll be popular with the people in Seattle who always talk about UW for the University of Washington.
Okay. Right on.
So you're K-Dub for the KW.
That's right, yeah, the KW universe. So, yeah, many years ago I watched a documentary of a young American soldier. Actually, he's quite old, but during World War II, he decided to join the fight against Germany over in Europe. So he was in, I don't know, probably 19, 20, 21.
Yeah.
And he decided to join And, of course, left all of his loved ones behind, probably had a sweetie, you know, was probably from Ohio on the farm or Idaho growing potatoes or whatever. And he said, I must do my duty here. I feel obligated, and I want to go over and fight.
Yeah.
So we did. He left everything behind and went overseas. I don't know how long it was, a year, 2 years. But the really incredible part was he was the only survivor of this horrific battle where everybody was killed. And doctors, psychologists, scientists, priests, whomever, pulled him aside after he got back from the war and said, you know, how did you survive this? You barely had a scratch on you. Of course, all your ammunition was spent, but you're the only survivor. What happened? And he fought and he fought and he fought. And he said, you know what? On the boat right over here, I accepted that I was probably not going to survive.
Huh, that's interesting.
I accepted that I was going to be dead. He said, so whenever I landed on the shores of Europe, I was already dead.
Huh.
So I was in Singapore writing on this whiteboard of mine in my office because I do business consulting and help people overcome their challenges and so forth. And it hit me. I thought, my God, this guy has the answer. And here it was, you know, a few years after where it took to resonate, and I actually combined it with the things that happened in my life.
Yeah.
And I said, we've been doing the same thing. Here he was already dead. If he's already dead, how can he be killed? And he survived.
Wow.
So at the time of my accident, I used the same technique that I had used my whole life because I had stuttered horribly for 28 years from age 6 to age 34. I'm now just 41.
Yeah.
And I pieced it together. And I said, I've survived so many things every day getting up, facing people, facing the humiliation, the pain. And when I finally broke it down and distilled it, I said, here's what I did, and I'm pretty sure here's what this young soldier did as well. At the time of my accident, and I'm talking just milliseconds before I hit that car, I said, this is going to hurt. I accepted on the spot the possibility of the worst. Not the worst, but the possibility of the worst. And she came from the right. I hit the front door as a red Toyota Tercel, two fingers on the front brake, and the last thing that went through my mind, besides the rest of the bike, was, this is going to hurt. And for that brief moment, it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life, Roy, and I'll tell you why. Because every waking hour we have, we always feel obligated that we have to do something.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to turn the volume down on the TV. I've got to make dinner. I've got to move this piece of paper. I've got to get up and tie my shoes. Whatever.
Yeah, I've been there and done that. I have
so
much trouble relaxing because I always think of things I should be doing. Exactly what
you
just described.
And at that time, that fraction of a second, that millisecond, I didn't have to do anything.
No, that's true.
I didn't have to do a thing. So anyways, I had a near-death experience. I was knocked out for about 3 minutes. Was standing on a ladder overlooking the accident. And in the back of the ambulance, I woke up. I came to, but everything was black. My eyes were open, but I couldn't see a thing. And the paramedic asked me the most important question I've ever been asked and will ever be asked. She said, can you wiggle your toes?
Yeah, that's what I was, be my immediate concern if I was in that situation.
Yeah, especially when you're 19 and you got your whole life ahead of you and so forth. So here's what I did. I did the same thing before I actually hit the car. I accepted in a fraction of a second, I accepted the possibility of the worst. So through my mind, through my emotions, and through every cell of my body, because I had 19 years practice doing this to overcome all my stuttering, I accepted, okay, the possibility is I'm going to be in a wheelchair. Maybe I'm a paraplegic, quadriplegic. I'm not going to be able to do sports. I can't climb Mount Everest. I can't walk on the moon. I may not be able to find the woman of my dreams. I may not be able to have children and all these other things.
Yeah.
And I sat with it for a fraction of a second.
All that went through your mind in a fraction of a second. That is truly
amazing.
In
a fraction of a second because I had many, many years practice.
Yeah.
And then guess what I did?
I don't know, because you were still practically
I wiggled my toes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I wiggled my toes. So this is a technique that anybody can use for anything, anywhere, anytime. And I'll give you one example of how I helped a client in Singapore. I had gotten in with a little bit of the wrong people, a network of pirates who were counterfeiting software all over the world in about 8 or 10 different countries. And the main woman got caught red-handed, and there was a stack of evidence, and the whole network was going to prison. And because I do very intuitive work, I'm somewhat, I don't know if I want to use the word psychic, but very intuitive. I can see things three-dimensionally. So it was a Wednesday, and D-Day was basically Monday morning, and I sat on the phone with her for 10 minutes, and I had her imagine the possibility of the worst. And she was in tears. She was going to be disgraced by her family, by the church, by the community. She was looking at getting engaged in 6 months, so she would probably go to prison and not have that wonderful opportunity of marriage and love and intimacy and all children and all that stuff. And we went through this on a very deep level, and she was crying, and she accepted it, and we got most of it out of her system. I then got a phone call Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning and said, "Knighton, it's a miracle. Everybody's safe. We're not going to jail. The whole, you know, everything is... It's an absolute miracle."
You know, it's a wonderful story you tell. The one thing that really surprises me is that your concept of imagining the worst possible outcome seems to be totally opposite of what we always read in the law of attraction, which says we visualize a positive future outcome to attract positive results. And that seems to be the precise opposite of your suggestion to imagine the worst possible outcome. Now, of course, the other thing is, I don't know how you plan for doing something like that in an instant of a crisis like you've been able to do and describe doing. But most of us amateurs, you mentioned that you honed your ability to, your intuition and your ability to analyze things through 28 years of struggling with your stuttering, and I think that's a fascinating story as well. So how can we develop those intuitions and that, as you call it, you talk about negating fate?
Yes. Well, here's a very simple way to look at things. From a psychic, intuitive point of view, call it what you want, I see that everything is alive.
Yeah.
And I mean that everything has a value. Okay, that big piece of rock sitting on the side of the road as you drive by at 65 miles an hour, that is alive. And I say it's alive because I can see it almost like the Matrix movies where we see programming behind it and then there is a programmer, but we see that it has value. That rock can be picked up and used as a paperweight, a doorstop. You can crush it up into gravel. There's so many things that you can do with it. So everything is alive. So whenever you have some type of pain, hurt, or challenge in your life, or any type of joy or love, this is also alive. We know it's alive because it affects you emotionally. It affects you mentally and emotionally. And you have a relationship with everything. If somebody dropped a rock on your head when you were 5 years old and you've got a scar for life, you're not going to like that rock. But if somebody who's a contractor can use that rock and sell it and make $10 and enrich somebody's landscaping with it and their life, they have a wonderful relationship to it. If you've been hurt by love many times, you don't like love. If you've been in love once and you're still in love and you have a great life, you love the feeling or the entity or this whole idea or concept of love. So everything is alive. If it's alive, it has a purpose. It has a destiny to it. There was a great story I read about somewhat of a intuitive healer, and he sat down with a person who had this really bad case of cancer. I don't know if there's good cases, but this really horrific bout of cancer.
Yeah.
And he actually talked to the cancer, and he said, "What is your purpose?" And the cancer answered back and said, "To kill people." It's not good.
The cancer was honest.
That's right. Yeah. It's not good, it's not bad, it's somewhat neutral. That thing has a purpose, right?
Yeah.
So if you can view your health challenge, your relationship challenge, whatever it is, some type of a potential disaster or the disaster you've already been through, if you can view that, please, if you can view that as having a purpose and a life, now you've done what very, very few people have done. And also, when we look at things being alive, let's look at from a human perspective. People are lonely. People want socializing, and people want company. So maybe that disease or that tragedy, whether it's bankruptcy, losing your home, foreclosure, whatever it is, why don't you view that as somebody or something that needs some company? So you just picture it, imagine it as being like a person, and talk to it. And talk to it, meaning you just become aware that it's there and it's in your life for a reason. If it's in your life, then it's obviously there for a reason, and you have a relationship with it. And often you don't have to be intuitive or psychic or a genius to do this. All you do is simply just think about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to shut everything off and sit in the corner and think about it and do your best to think about it with your eyes open. Please don't try not to think about it with your eyes closed, but do it with your eyes open. Pick a spot on the wall, relax your vision, and just think about this thing that is bothering you and do your best to get into it, and then you make friends with it because this thing is alone. It's come into your life for a reason. Maybe it's lonely. Maybe it needs to fulfill its purpose and recognize it. And once you do that, even if it's in the initial stages or if you're in the middle of it or if the disaster has already passed, then you accept the possibility of the worst, that, you know what, I'm not going to have a home forever. I'm going to have this health issue forever. Whatever it is, you accept the possibility of the worst.
Yeah, we've had several guests in the past that, you know, when they talk about the law of attraction, it can be very naive to just assume a positive result if you're not really in tune with the negatives and the realities of the situation. The law of attraction is not going to work very well. And that's kind of what the point you're making right there. I think that you have to be in touch with reality, be it negative or positive or whatever.
Well, the thing is that life is complete. Everything has two sides, three sides, 10 sides.
Yeah.
So when we use principles such as the law of attraction, which in certain circumstances it works well, but some of the core principles are flawed. However, we must also view the negative. You can't have happiness without sadness. We always have this contrast and difference. So why don't you go ahead, look at the bad side, and when you accept the possibility of the worst, the next stage is to move into the contingency plan. What is your survival plan? So for example, I was removing the wheel bearing on the right front of my car. I don't know much about wheel bearings, but I didn't have the right tools. And as I got the tire off, the brake rotor and caliper off, I'm faced with 4 bolts that look like they were super rusty. Okay, as I'm turning them, I'm stripping the nut. It sounds like the bolt is screeching. It's going to snap. And I stopped for a second, and I said to myself, okay, let's go through the K-Duck technique. What's the possibility of the worst? Tow truck at $160, in the shop for maybe $400. I'm out of the joy of driving my car for maybe a week. Can I handle this? Can I do this? And I went through my checklist. I felt it in every cell of my body. And I said, okay, the possibility is I could really screw this thing up. I could be without a car and out of pocket, blah, 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 blah. And guess what? 3 minutes later or 30 seconds later, all the bolts came out with ease. There was no more squeaking. There was no more stripping. I have the wrong tools. Suddenly, they became the right tools. They weren't flying out of my hand. I got the wheel bearing off. 1 hour later, I'm driving in my car. It's been great over a year later. What happens when you accept the possibility of the worst? You fulfill the destiny of the disaster. You fulfill the purpose, the role, the fate of that thing. You're doing it in your mind, in your heart, in your body. If you don't do this, it becomes a secret that feels almost like a balloon, right? So here you have this, potential for the worst. And the worst is you could lose your home. If you don't address that, this negative energy grows and festers and grows, and basically the balloon stretches or expands, and at some point
the worry you have expands it by not addressing it.
That's right. And then the balloon explodes, and then the invisible becomes the physical, and then you lose your home. Versus if you accept the possibility of the worst, think about it, make friends with it, breathe it, live it, kind of like time travel, pretend it's already happened, you end up deflating or you diffusing the energy that's contained within that balloon so the balloon does not explode. You do it in spirit. You do it in your mind, your heart, your body, and your soul. And that's the whole point to all of this, is seeing that everything has both sides. Sure, you could have a win, but you could also have a loss. And if you have a loss, what does that look, taste, feel, sound like? You must look at all sides of the scenario here. You can't just ignore one and say, well, I only want the good side. That's fine and dandy, but go ahead, accept the possibility of the worst, and then you take away what I call the karma. You deflate it, you interfere it, you cancel out the karma.
Yeah.
Just like I did with that wheel bearing. I didn't know what I was doing, but I accepted that the whole thing could go down the tubes pretty quick.
Well,
and suddenly, Roy, the bolt stopped squeaking. It's incredible.
Well, here's another interesting concept you have. How can I use imaginary time travel to clear obstacles from a path of a problem I'm facing or some kind of a challenge?
Well, that's
can
basically
I,
what
in fact, go like Back to the Future? It sounds like that old movie.
Yeah. Well, no, I basically just had covered that. Was that here you are waiting for the ball to drop. You're waiting for the decision, right? You're not quite sure if it's going to be bad. It could be good. It could be bad. So you go into the future and you say, okay, even though the decision is to be rendered in 5 days or 6 days or maybe 2 months or 3 months, you're not quite sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to time travel. I'm going to go into the future.
Okay.
And I'm going to see what my life will look like living with the disaster.
Okay, you go time into the future with the negative outcome or with positive outcome?
Negative outcome. Negative, because what you're doing is you are addressing the stress. And here is the one thing when it comes to developing your intuitive side, your inner knowing, is that stress blocks the solutions.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anyone
whenever you get stressed out, you've been there, you get stressed out, you can't think properly.
You know, that's happened so many times to me. That
you
sit around worrying about something and getting stressed over something, and then it's just about impossible to address it creatively, to think of a solution or to do anything.
That's right.
Really get off the snide and do something about it.
That's right. So then, let's go back to the example of everything being alive or having purpose.
Yeah.
Stress has a purpose, whether you want to break it down into fear, worry, guilt, anxiety, jealousy, anger, hatred, or whatever. All of that has a purpose, and its purpose is to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
So why don't you go into the future, time travel, with your heart, mind, body, and soul, and why don't you live out that stress? Why don't you fulfill the purpose of worry, fulfill the purpose of anger, frustration, whatever it is. Live it, breathe it, and then guess what? Stress has no reason to be in your physical life in the form of worry, doubt, jealousy, hatred, fear, because you have already gone in to the spiritual, into the invisible, and you have fulfilled its purpose already by saying, okay, I've lost my home. I've got a few thousand dollars left. I'm going to buy a big bag of rice. I can feed my family with that. You know, people in Asia, Vietnam, China, they live off rice 3-4 times a day. We could live for a full year off a 50 or 100-pound bag of rice that cost me $25. Then I'm going to buy myself this camper van, and we're going to live in this. So you will go through this contingency plan almost like you're beginning to set it in motion emotionally, mentally and emotionally. So what you're doing is saying to the stress, worry, fear, doubt, whatever, okay, I understand you, you're alive, I have a relationship with you, you are to make me feel bad. So I'm going to feel bad right now, and I'm going to spend 10 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, feeling bad.
I was going to ask you how long this normally would take to get this stress out of here, to live the stress so you can get it behind you.
Well, the woman in the Philippines, in Manila, about 10 minutes was what it took her. For me, it takes a fraction of a second because I've been doing this for so long.
Yeah.
For others, it could take half an hour. It could take 1 or 2 days. But get into that, and you must sort of exhaust the stress, exhaust, And really what it is, the purpose again, is to make you feel bad. So exhaust yourself feeling bad. And what happens when that stress goes, now your intuitive mind, your creative side, your inner knowing now has access to great information. Because when I speak of information, I speak of it residing in or on a frequency. And when stress comes in, it's a different frequency. It puts you over at 107.5, which is not where you want to be. And when you live that stress and clear it or diffuse it, then you come back to maybe 92.3, and that's where you need to be. So all the information comes to you without distress, and it comes to you in the form of solutions, either an idea, an inspiration, or as a miracle, as an instantaneous, on-the-spot result or magical solution.
Well, that's certainly... This whole concept you're talking about is certainly fascinating. It's so different from the normal suggestions we get so often from the law of attraction and all those that we constantly think positive thoughts, and that makes the negative go away. And so often that doesn't work, obviously, as you know.
Yes, yes.
But this is certainly something I'm going to try the next time I face some kind of a major you know, what I'd call a disaster or a real serious problem in my life, because it sounds...
Well, how about a minor one? How about a minor one?
Well, no, that's true. It certainly, if it works for the major things, it would work for the minor things too, I would think. But
The one thing that stress wants, it wants to be in your life. It wants to connect with you. It wants to feed off you. So by you being, in a way, unattached, it goes somewhere else to someone who has an attachment to that. So that's what you're doing, is you're being very, very unattached.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, unavailable.
Is that what you mean by the secret of impossible success, or what exactly does that term denote that you talked about, you discovered?
Everything that we have discussed today is accepting the possibility of the worst, living and breathing it, feeling it, letting it go, and basically overcoming your great challenges, whether it's small in your life or large, or something like a long-term affliction I had or a challenge I had of stuttering, is that by using this, going into the future, time traveling, fulfilling its role, the role of the stress or the role of the disaster. And then basically after that, being very open to solutions and answers that come in, whether it's
I was fascinated by the fact that you said this long struggle you had with stuttering really developed your intuition, so that because you were constantly visualizing and battling that problem, you had a real deep intuitive insight into what was going on around you and what other people were thinking and what was going on in the world.
That was
fascinating.
Yeah, I was always looking for a way to sort of protect myself from all of the pain. So I became very, very aware in my own specific way. And then when I was 33, I had the worst bout of humiliation ever. Hmm. And that's when I had decided right then and there, after 27 years of stuttering, that this was my life and this was who I am. And I made peace with it. I made friends with it. And approximately 1 year later, I woke up one morning, I sat in my home office, and my speech was about 80-85% correct.
Yeah, nobody would ever guess listening to you now that you ever had that problem. Well, tell people about your website and how they can obtain your book.
Sure, great. TheSilentKnight.com, that's The-SilentKnight, and that's K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yeah, like so the Knights hyphen- of the Old Round Table.
That's right. Yeah, .com is where you can learn about my story. I have some packages available as there, an ebook. I also offer some coaching as well.
Yeah, you got some nice package deals there. I noticed that you can have some coaching on a person's individual challenge that you'll talk to them on the phone and help them out on that.
That's right. Yeah, and also my main website is knightonwarbeck.com, K-N-I-G-H-T-O-N. warbeck.com. You can learn about some other neat things that I do, and send me an email at info@the-silentknight.com. I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it's even interesting. You also defrag real property. I don't know if you do that for people that like in Utica, New York, or whether they have to be around Alberta where you are? Do you do that defrag?
No, the property defrag is one of my natural talents as somebody who's intuitively developed. And what I do is I look at a person's property, I see it with my X-ray vision, and I see that there's some disharmonies within. I rearrange the information, kind of like the Matrix movie with all the programming. I rearrange the information with the lamp, and then the people often get instant results in their lives, whether it's somebody who didn't want to sell the home and suddenly it sells, or there was a gentleman in Fiji about 2 years ago was having all kinds of problems on the property. I wasn't even talking with him. I was talking to his sister. There was heavy lightning strikes. People were getting injured on the property. No guys were showing up for work because he was developing this property from the early 1900s. And in 3 minutes, I went ahead and, again, looked at the land from where I was sitting in Canada. The brother said instantly the rains came in, and the very next day all the people came back to work, and there's been no issue since. So I also offer a service looking at your home or your business. And I use my X-ray vision and my natural talent to sort of bless the home. I don't deal with the spirit side of things, ghosts and goblins. I go beneath that. I go to the quantum level, and I look at the foundation in which the ghost and the goblin sit. So whenever I change that foundation, they end up going somewhere else because they no longer have a home.
Well, that's a little beyond the scope of this program, but I was very fascinated by your defragging. And well, I guess your X-ray vision is probably just about as good as Superman's.
I always
used to wonder if Superman could see through ladies' clothing when he used that X-ray vision. Well, we want to certainly thank you for joining us today, and Knighton is certainly an inspiration to me, and it's opened my eyes to, and I'm sure a lot of listeners' eyes to, the possibility of imagining the worst instead of always, naively thinking that good things will follow. And I would highly recommend his website, KnightonWarbeck.com. And, of course, I always want to welcome our website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com, and my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. And that's renewal for men and women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. And we have 10 videos you can view, and also a free gift, our MART mini course, at our website. And thank you so much, Knighton, for joining us today. And best of success in all your ventures.
Thank you, too. Thank you very much.
Well, we continue on the subject of midlife recovery. And in these difficult times, so many of us at middle age face major challenges, even the most hopeful among us. How will you work through the great heartache or catastrophe of your life thus far, whether you've already suffered from it or whether it's something in our future, and who knows what the future holds? Loss of a loved one, a marital breakup, loss of a home, job, health, financial hardships, then what we call lingering soul injuries following any type of trauma, and then the major emphasis on this program really is you're simply not happy or fulfilled with where you are today, and you regret a number of the decisions you made in the past. You're not doing what you really want to do, and you're not living how you really want to live. You ask yourself, is this all there is? Has joy been eluding you? Well, our current guest is here to help you navigate through any challenge and overcome any adversity, and our guest is Dr. Jane Symington, known far and wide as the Woman of Hope. She's an award-winning author, keynote speaker, and educator, a certified clinical hypnotherapist, a certified grief and trauma specialist, and she's counseled thousands worldwide. And her latest book, published just last December, is Through Soul's Eyes, Reinventing a Life of Joy and Promise. And hello, Dr. Symington, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you, Roy.
Well, let's get right to it. What are some initial steps a traumatized or maybe just a disappointed man or woman needs to take so that the healing process can begin and so that they can restore a life of joy and a positive second half of life?
Well, midlife is often a time to review the life we have led up to this point. And that's a very soulful thing. Soul is asking us to take a really different look at the journey that we have had.
Yeah.
And in so doing, there are often regrets. choices we made that we wish we have not made.
Yeah, and that's so pointless to sit around fretting about things, choices that we made in the past that we can't change.
Well, it's a difficult thing for people, and I'd like to give three bits of wisdom to help them reframe some of those choices and to view those choices perhaps differently and to move that piece of their life forward in a more positive way.
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
And so the first point I'd like to make, the first bit of wisdom is reward yourself for the choice that you've made.
That's
an interesting one, but truthfully, if we looked back at our life and didn't see anything we would like to change, that would really mean that we have not grown.
Yeah, that's true.
So when we look back and see, oh, I should have done that differently, we have actually grown and changed. And so to reward ourselves for that and to say, well, if I have a chance to live that again, I would make a different choice.
Yeah, that's a very comforting thought that, you know, I made some wrong choice, what I now consider wrong choices in the past, but I'm examining myself and I know myself better and I will make better choices in the future.
That's absolutely true. And I help people do that all of the time, to look at it, to reframe it, we call it.
Yeah.
And the second bit of wisdom around the reframing is I have people put themselves right back into the circumstance that they were when they made that choice. So with the knowledge and the resources and the supports that we had at that time, I take people back and I say, I want you to put yourself right back there with the same education, the same finances, everything, and say, if I were right back there, would I make that same choice or a similar choice?
Yeah.
And most likely people have to admit that they made the best choice they could at the time.
Yeah, that's so true. I do that exercise frequently in my own mind. And like you say, you often realize that the person you were back then and the knowledge you had back then and the circumstances you were in back then, you probably didn't make such a bad choice.
Well, we often judge the past with where we are now.
Yeah.
Which is not therapeutic. We need to judge the past with where we were then.
Yeah.
And then do that affirmation again. I did the best I could, and if I have another chance, I will make a different choice now.
Yeah.
And the third point that I would like to make, and I often encourage people to do, is when you're looking at a regret from the past, to look at that event and to say to yourself, and we do this a fair amount in therapy, look at that event and then ask yourself, and then what happened?
That's another very good suggestion.
And so we might say, well, because I did that, then I ended up going back to school.
Yeah.
And then I will say, and then what happened? Well, I met Joe at school and I married him.
Yeah.
And then what happened? So the power in that is taking what we see as a negative experience and looking at it the way soul would look at it and say, this was part of your growth, this was part of your change. Even though these were adversities or appeared to be adversities at the time, look at where that has taken you. And so asking ourselves over and over, and then what happened, and then what happened. It's rewarding and blessing, and we then can move that negative thing into more of a grateful place.
Yeah. And that... Go ahead. I didn't mean
to... No, well, I think that we actually call it doing life review, but it's so well known that in midlife, we actually do a major life review, and that's especially true for those who have gone right now through another major crisis. So if they've just lost the home, maybe just retired, that's already causing a life review. And then if there are things in the past that have not been satisfactory, this new change can rip open those old wounds, and we have to look at them. But I'm encouraging people to see that as a positive thing, because this is giving you time now in your middle age, when we're not so busy raising kids and all of those things, time to look at our life and to bless the good pieces that we had and to revisit the ones that we wish we had done differently and then try some of these therapeutic strategies to reframe it and see it through soul's eyes.
Yeah. You know, I was so interested in your book, Through Soul's Eyes. Early in the book, you talk about when you were learning about your mother's very serious illness, and you went out on a walk in nature. And tell us about that incident, with you, because I was so impressed that your attitude went from, what do I really want, because I love my mother and I want her with me, to what's best for her and what's best going forward. And tell us about that experience, because I was very impressed.
Well, it started out, I was actually studying in Bali, doing my part of my doctorate work, and I got the news early in the morning by a telephone call. And I am I have taken training in healing and different kinds of healing practices, one of them being to send healing energy at a distance.
Yeah.
And so I got up, my apartment was right along the ocean, and I got up, went for a walk with the intention that I would face east, the place of new beginnings, it was dawn, was coming, and that I would send energy in the direction to heal the what was diagnosed as an inoperable tumor in my mother.
Yeah.
When I got out there, I saw a magnificent scene as the sun was coming up, this wonderful, huge bird was lifting from the water and into the sun, and a second bird then came and followed it immediately. And I knew that this was a soul message. I knew symbolically, spirit was telling me, your dad has come to guide your mother into the afterlife. And I took a huge breath knowing that my need to send healing energy was my need not to be orphaned. It had nothing to do with the fact that she was finished a very well-lived life here, and it was now time for her to transition and to move on to the next
so
piece of her journey.
Because you would, by recognizing your soul's purpose and being in community with the spirituality, you recognize that you know, what's best for you isn't necessarily best for the loved one, and that you know that because so many people go through those traumatic terminal illness situations, and I would assume that must have brought great peace to your mind and really expanded.
Well, it did, and it also opens up another piece that we could talk about. You know, in prayer, I often encourage the people who come to my conferences and my students to think about prayer. And when we're praying for somebody, we really should be sending that prayer for what is their highest good.
That's right.
Because we often put our own parameters on what should be best for their soul, but that may not be best for their greater purpose.
Yeah, that's true. No, that was very enlightening to me. And I'm next time I pray, when there's a serious situation for a loved one or someone I'm worried about, I will definitely step back and think about what's really best for them, and also, of course, to realize that the reality here on Earth is not the only reality there is, that there's life after death and that there's a future for and a transition that may be best. And I think that's a great way to deal with grief as well. So, that, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I was just affirming what you were saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, tell people how they can get your book, because I think it's certainly something that all of us need to concentrate more on the deeper soul purpose rather than the traumas or the immediate reality we face.
Both of my books actually focus on that. The one that we're speaking about this morning, Through Soul's Eyes, Reinventing a Life of Joy and Promise, the best way to receive it is through Amazon.com.
Oh, I see.
And just be sure to spell my name correctly. It's SimingTon. You might also choose to go to my website. I have a website called Through Soul's Eyes.
Yeah, that's where I access the book. I know it's,
and it's there's some wonderful information. They could also go to my other website called DrJaneSimington.com.
Well, don't you also have a site, takingflightinternational.com?
Because that's right, and the site where we offer a lot of the books and some very good free material is takingflightinternational.com.
I know you also have some films and some videos and CDs, and so there's a lot of good stuff there to
That's right, and they're all based really on moving your life in a very positive, joyful way after some kind of life challenge or adversity.
Yeah, and the life challenge may be just simply that you're just dissatisfied with where you are now and, you know, disappointed in what life has brought thus far. But it's especially helpful, I think, when you have dealt with a traumatic event, either in your own life or with a loved one. And it's so important to concentrate on, well, you recognize the reality, this is what happened, but then to move beyond that and say there is purpose in everything that happens, and I am ready to deal with that because I recognize that there's more to the universe than what I'm immediately aware of.
Well, the truth is that as people heal from their grief and their trauma, if they really do an intense amount of healing, they are then at a place of really looking at what is the next step for me. And
yeah,
that usually is a big question about soul's purpose.
Yeah.
And I often hear people say, now that I've healed, I've changed so much, I've expanded
yeah.
so much, I see the world differently. What am I to do with the rest of my life? So
yeah,
this is very much about a soul's purpose.
And if you look at it that way, that I've had a terrible loss, but what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And how can I lead this into a growth experience? That makes a world of difference, and you don't sit around for years. Then obviously you grieve for a while, but you don't sit around for years with your life destroyed because
That's
there's
right.
nothing gained in that, and you're not bringing
but
your loved one back or restoring the job you lost or whatever.
The important thing is to understand that many people believe that if you've lost someone significant, my son was killed. And I had to reframe all of that idea that I had and was told by so many people, you will grieve for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Well, we're meant to be whole people.
Yeah.
And we are meant to be healed and whole. And so I do not believe that, nor do I teach that. And I certainly encourage anybody who holds that belief to challenge that belief in their
yeah.
own minds and say, I choose to live a life of joy and promise.
Yeah, I would highly recommend you go to review that book on Amazon.com or at Dr. Simonson's website. That's Through Soul's Eyes, Reinventing a Life of Joy and Promise. And that's exactly what we want for everyone that listens into this program. And thank you so much, Dr. Simonson, for joining us today. This has been most enlightening.
Thank you for having me, Roy.
Have a great day.
You as well.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.